Sean McDermott was a very good head coach. This was a very good football team for a long, long time. They fired him and said, that's not good enough. So the ownership is telling you right now, what we did in the past is not good enough. 12-5 and not getting to the Super Bowl is not good enough. So I don't know if there is a head coach in an organization under as much pressure for the right reasons than Joe Brady and the Buffalo Bills, because we all know good is not good enough. He's got to be great. He's got to get this team to a Super Bowl. It doesn't matter what they do in the regular season. They can go 17-0. Nobody cares. What are you going to do once the playoffs starts?
Half true, in my opinion. That's Booger McFarland. Half true. If they go 17-0, that's extreme. People will care if they go 17-0. If they go 15-2, listen, they've not been the one seed yet. So if they're the one seed, then yeah, we'll care, but we'll only care in relation to what it means for the playoffs. So in that way, I guess you could say, yeah, we won't care. But the flip end, we very much would care.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's just hypothetically say that the Bills really struggle to get to the playoffs.
Yeah.
That's going to matter. That's going to stick in people's minds.
Oh, yeah.
And it might make it even tougher for them in the playoffs. Again, so part of this is what it would mean for the postseason, but it won't feel great, and I think there would be pressure upon the head coach and the organization and everybody if they are a 9 or a 10-win team that really has to struggle to get in at the very end. I mean, the year that the Bills won the division at the 11th hour, they went down to Miami and beat the Dolphins needing to win the division. There were plenty of calls for McDermott's head during that year when they were 6-6. And yeah, there was angst when that was happening. I mean, of course, if they missed the playoffs, it would be like,
yeah, that's it.
That was a fiery time. You're absolutely right. Lots of calls. And then Ken Dorsey ended up getting the boot.
Right. Would if they limp in and lose in the wild card round, like,
what does that do?
That's bye-bye Bean, right? Like, that's it.
Promoted them. Like, there's no way there in a season
no,
they do that.
No uproar, guy. Like,
there would be uproar.
The people would be on fire.
I don't think there is any real is someone getting fired conversation from this season unless they miss the playoffs.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
They have to miss the playoffs, and I'm not even sure then. I feel like it would be pretty.
If they miss, you know, Josh,
and
they
right,
have to
another
do
year right, of sorry. Allen's career, and it's not even a playoff exit. It's yeah, you don't even make it.
Yeah, Josh is healthy, by the way, in this. Like,
right,
of course.
Yes. Yes. This is all
yeah,
qualified with that.
Sure.
Like, I would struggle myself to feel like I've gotten to a good place with the Brady thing. Like, I'm all right. I hated when they fired McDermott. I hated how they handled the whole thing. I thought it was really just kind of gross. And,
what was the statement again? What did
Admiral.
It say?
Admiral. Yeah, Admiral job. Shout out.
Shout out, Admiral.
Yeah. And but I've gotten to a place now where I'm thinking about Brady, where I'm like, listen, I like the concept of what he kind of represents for them. And
yep,
so I'm in. I still don't like what the whole thing felt like with the transition and one guy lives, one guy doesn't. Like, that whole thing bothered me in a way, and I think it bothered a lot of people
mm-hmm,
in that same way. And I think if they struggle this year and it's like, doesn't really look like Brady's got it the way we might have hoped, and the roster, there's some issues, and like Leonard, the defense isn't that great, and they limp in and then that like get steamrolled by Denver again.
Mm-hmm. Or even New England.
I don't know how we're coming in here on Monday morning and not getting 500 calls like they fired the wrong guy. And mm-hmm, I don't know how the owner doesn't go like, uh-oh, I might need to do something here again. Because
mm-hmm,
everybody kind of felt like maybe if one gets fired, both of them go. And that didn't happen. And how much more life does the other guy get? To me, that's just how I think about it. I don't think that has to happen. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that's the year they're going to have. I don't want that to happen. Like, let me make that clear.
Yeah.
But I could see a path where if that's how things go, it's going to get brutal
yeah,
in this town.
I get what you're saying. I just look at it as they promoted him to president of football operations and all of that too. And in one season to just fire him.
Right.
I don't necessarily, even if they miss, that's one thing. If they limp in and get rolled, I still think they give him another year to whatever.
It would have to be a catastrophe.
Yeah.
I think there could definitely be more and more heat. That's already happened to some extent, and it would only continue to. He would be the lightning rod now. Like, that is part of what McDermott not being here anymore does. Like, Brady's new, and Brady is Bean's hire. So even now, whereas before, the two entities were separated just for this you know, for a public consumption and like what fans think of what's happening with the team, they were separate but equal in that you could like the job one's doing and not the other. Now it's much more tied, where anything Brady does that fans don't like is now a reflection on Bean.
Yeah.
And for that, I think, of course, it works both ways, though. Whereas if things were going wrong, then the dial would get turned up to 11. And on the other front, if things are going great, then it's going to look great for him.
Oh, yeah.
And anything Brady does that looks amazing is going to look good on Bean. And that could be the offense looking different, and their passing game is back, and they figured out ways to use the receivers. Suddenly, the coaching, whether it's good or bad, is now more of a reflection on the general manager. So, yeah, like, they would not fire the GM unless I don't even know what it would be. They would have to miss the playoffs, and then I'm not even sure after that.
Right. No, because you can't move on from Brady.
Like, we're talking a multiple-year experiment here, at least. And if they're great and they win the division or they challenge for Super Bowls, they make the Super Bowl, then it's just going to be these two guys running the team for a long time now.
Right.
So,
and I hope that that's how it goes. And I think this year, Bean's got more to gain this year than he has since he drafted Allen.
Yeah.
He's got the ability to go, like, if it all works, like, listen, I told you guys, wasn't me. I got it. I figured it out. I got my coach, and now we're great, and we won.
And that the roster, and this is why, again, I don't think that it's even a thought. The owner agreed that the roster, he said at the press conference, the roster was Super Bowl caliber.
He did agree, yeah.
Which I think is nuts, but if they go out and play great, then that will feel like justification. Like, oh yeah, the roster was Super Bowl caliber. Yeah. And
I mean, they did add they added a wide receiver, hopefully,
they did.
DJ Moore. Like, it's a little different than
last
season.
But the roster is not so different. I mean, the defense didn't really get overhauled like we thought it would. Like, the old guys are out, but otherwise, like, they didn't make sweeping changes on the defensive side of the ball. There are a lot of the same pieces, and if different coaches come in with modest upgrades in some departments, then it'll feel like justification, I think, for, yeah, the roster was good enough. And the last coach didn't think so, and a lot of people didn't think so. I still don't think it is, but I guess we're going to find out.
Yeah.
Tom in Rochester next up. What's up, Tom?
Hey, gentlemen. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Just two thoughts. You were talking about what can take the Bills to the next level in terms of the Super Bowl. Another name to throw out there, it's Cole Bishop, right? You know, does Jim Leonard get a hold of him and he just, you know, becomes the top five safety in the league? You know, I think that could be in the cards. The other thought is just, you know, back to the Brandon Cooks. I'm all about bringing him back. I agree with the approach so far, which seems to be Brandon, stay in shape, but we don't need to bring you to training camp. You know, we obviously, it doesn't take you much time to build some chemistry with Josh. Let's see what we have with our players, but we should bring him back because right now our receiving core, it's, I guess you could call it average, but, you know, we're one DJ Moore rolled ankle away from it looking pretty, you know, looking like the Jacksonville or Denver game last year, where it's like, who's Josh, you know, give Josh Allen, and this is who we're throwing the football to, right? You know, so
yep.
I'm all about bringing him back so we, you know, so it doesn't get rough in a hurry again once injuries come up. But thanks, gentlemen.
Yeah, thanks, Tom, for the call. Yeah, I'm mostly with you, too, that I think there would be a better role for him not having to be such a focal point of the offense. Like, hey, come here, and you're not going to be the number one, but come here and be the number four, play just a percentage of the snaps, and be a downfield threat. Maybe a lot of times you're going to be running routes just to push the defense back. You're not actually even going to get the ball a lot. I think there's a role for him here, but it's got to come at the expense of somebody else. And those snaps, those routes have to come at the expense of somebody else. Is that the rookie? Is that Bell? Or is that Coleman? Or is that Palmer? Like, I don't think you can bring him here, have him play a role, and not have somebody else take a hit. So that's where I'm at. And I don't mind talking about, yeah, Palmer maybe doesn't have a future here if he can't stay on the field. Or Coleman, it was all word salad that we're just really waiting for somebody to give us the best offer come training camp time. Like, guys get traded training camp right around. The Bills acquired a former first-round pick in Corey Coleman during training camp from the Browns. And I'm sure there are a thousand examples since then. When we come back, I'm going to save World Cup of Joe for a little bit later on because I want to make sure I give these guys time to get a good guess at it. The series that Jeremy Fowler is doing at ESPN, where he's having, I think he has 70 executives, coaches, and scouts to rank the top 10 at each position in the league. We have the tight ends, and I'll let you know where Dalton Kincaid falls in to this article. He is mentioned. He is mentioned. I'll let you know what the league thinks of Dalton Kincaid next.
Sean McDermott was a very good head coach. This was a very good football team for a long, long time. They fired him and said, that's not good enough. So the ownership is telling you right now, what we did in the past is not good enough. 12-5 and not getting to the Super Bowl is not good enough. So I don't know if there is a head coach in an organization under as much pressure for the right reasons than Joe Brady and the Buffalo Bills, because we all know good is not good enough. He's got to be great. He's got to get this team to a Super Bowl. It doesn't matter what they do in the regular season. They can go 17-0. Nobody cares. What are you going to do once the playoff starts?
Welcome to the
Spin Booger Zone.
Booger McFarland, Nate Geary hive mind.
The Spin Zone.
Did not see that coming in the year 2026, but here we are. Yeah.
The Spin Zone.
I'm sitting with it. I'm sort of contemplating it. Like I think it's funny. Like, to me, I totally get that premise. Like you said it before I heard Booger McFarland say it, and I liked it then, because my approach has mostly been kind of pump the brakes. Don't assume everything just continues along because of all the change. And instead, this is, well, the change means the change comes, brings the pressure, which is interesting. Like, I wonder, like, if McDermott hadn't been fired and was still here going into year 10, would the Bills have the most pressure of any team in the league because Sean McDermott's in year 10 and Josh Allen still hasn't been to a Super Bowl? I think yes. So
it's just pressure from a different, it's a different color pressure.
McDermott from the equation, yeah. Put in a rookie head coach, and just assume the same pressure situation, that's a lot, man.
Yeah.
That is a lot. I hope they're up to it. That's a lot, I think. For Allen, for everyone.
First time head coach, first time defensive play caller in the NFL. It's not his first time calling plays, generally speaking. He did it
Wisconsin.
In Wisconsin. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of firsts in this group of coaches. Yeah. And, I mean, on top of that, you do have the unknown right now of what DJ Moore is in this offense. There was a predict DJ Moore stat line, and I think I put, like, 88 catches, 1,200 yards, 7 touchdowns. People were like, that's insane. Like, I'm like, that's what a number one receiver's numbers are. So is he a number one receiver? Because if he is, that's what you're looking at.
Well, one of the ways I can be talked out of, and believe me, when I sound like I'm pessimistic, it's, you know, I still think, like, I would take 11 wins. I think 11 wins is reasonable and realistic, even with all the concerns I have. The one thing that can get me out of that headspace is the idea that all the new, especially on defense, like, if they can't keep teams down as effectively as mostly they did while McDermott was their coach in the regular season anyway. If they can't play to that consistent level and are forced into a different, like the focus of the offense becomes a little bit less. Yep. I don't think you're ever going to run completely away from James Cook. He led the league in rushing. You were excellent at it. So you're going to want to keep doing a good amount of that. But if they just start leaning a little more because they have to, game script tells you we got to keep up. And that means more throwing. And that means maybe DJ Moore has that kind of season and Josh Allen has, you know, a more explosive year. Maybe that's a thing that sort of keeps them going as a top powerhouse in the AFC.
I keep thinking more and more about 2020. And I think more and more about how that team was built offensively, which was, we don't really have a guy in the running, but we, like, it was Singletary and Zach Moss and, yes, you know, who, right. I don't know, right? And I think T.J. Yeldon moonlighted for a moment.
I don't remember that, but okay. I remember him on the Bills. I'm not sure.
If it was,
anyway.
Yeah. But you think about the every level passing attack they had, right? That was early Dawson Knox. It was Cole Beasley. It was John Brown. It was short, intermediate,
and
deep.
And Diggs, of course. Like and in Diggs, 20, of he course. Arrived here in 20.
Right. So you had the number one receiver, the take the top off the defense guy, the runs all the underneath routes, first down, you know, merchant.
Life preserver.
And then
guy,
and then an opportunistic pass catching tight end that could get you a lot and could do a lot in the red zone. And I start to look at this team and you start to see similar parallels to how they are trying to build the thing. And the question I keep coming back to is, and I'm sure I can guarantee when you're at a bar stool at, you know, your favorite North Buffalo, you know, tavern, that you have at least had one person come up to you and say, of the sorts, yeah, but, you know, McDermott was holding Joe Brady back. Joe Brady really wanted to throw the football, but it was McDermott that really wanted to run the football. And the only reason I'm going to give that idea a moment of oxygen is, when was the last time since Sean McDermott's been hired or been fired that you've heard everybody eats?
Well, I think that they with intent have left that.
I think it's done
at a rest stop.
And I just wonder, they left it somewhere in the 90s.
Which is what should have been, which is what should have happened to
it. That was like a funny, fun little 1 year. We're gonna get through this together kind of thing. And then year two, I was like, this isn't that cool anymore.
No,
this is not cool anymore.
No.
But I do want to say, like, a little of it is now, okay, well, we got a number one receiver. You start hearing the head coach and offensive play caller, Joe Brady, say they want to move the offense and have it run through Josh Allen again. And I think if they do that, they have, I think, risen their ceiling.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm saying. Like,
Maybe lower their floor.
My premise is that they're sort of forced at knife point to do it because their defense isn't as good. But however you get there, and if they're there without even seeing the defense play a down yet, then good for them.
Agreed.
Because they should just get over that.
Lean
into Allen.
The prevent defense and hold the ball, it hasn't worked. Not when it matters. It's worked in it's won them a ton of games in the regular season. And I don't want to just glaze over that and not give credit where credit's due. It has won them a bleep ton of regular season football games. And we can talk about how regular season, at this point, for a lot of Bills fans, doesn't matter anymore. I also think it's sort of the attitude that I've had in games when I'm on after you guys in the post game and a bunch of people, you know, want to call in and tell me I'm just the young Jerry Sullivan because I'm so salty and angry after the Bills win a game. And I'm like, yeah, but like, you beat the Jets by 3. Do you want me to get on the show and
How great was that?
No, you beat the Jets by 3 points. And I think that's really where I've gotten to the point where it's hard. 7 years ago, you could be excited about a 3-point Jets win on the road when in week one when, you know, John Brown gets that game-winning touchdown. You're like, wow, this is exciting. I've done so many depressing shows that is really cool. But at a certain point, they have less juice.
It's a lot less impressive.
Juice. Yeah. There's just less juice.
I know, like, someone's waiting to tell you, like, it's hard to win games in our league, like Dick Durano always used to say. But, yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, it gets harder and harder. I fight this battle constantly. It gets harder and harder to just enjoy the regular season.
Yep.
Because, you know, Mike will reference. He's got the one friend, acquaintance. I can't wait until we beat Kansas City and I feel nothing. Like in a regular season game. Like, yeah.
We are definitely
close to that. I feel like
that
is the definitive, like, I'm numb to how great we are take I think you could ever have.
Yeah.
Because, like, there should be never, ever, ever be anything ordinary about beating the Chiefs, I don't think. But I get it. I mean, it you need to do it in January, not in November, and, you know, they still haven't done it.
Don't do that.
So
they don't do that.
It's, yeah. Yeah, I like this pressure point.
Yeah, it's no pun intended, but pressure point.
I did not mean that at all. I didn't even hear it.
Yeah, I did.
Good thing you're here.
I think
Yeah, right. 803-0550. Let me say the phone number without laughing. 803-0550 is the phone number. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, we're just hanging out, talking some football here. I hope that's okay. Nate Geary is in for Mike. Mike Tenier is coming up at the top of the hour. We'll pose this to him. Do the Bills have the most pressure of any team in the NFL? And talk about everything we've been talking about mostly with Mike. Looking forward to that. And then Joe Yurden, we haven't touched base with him, I don't think, since the Sabres. I think we had him on once after the thing ended. But anyway, we'll talk about the lay of the land here and whether there's any reason to think something could be percolating out there still in trade land for the hockey team. That's as we go. But again, 803-0550, lines are wide open. If you're so inclined, Nate Geary in for Mike. I'm the Bulldog, and this is WGR.
Got a shout out, Sneaky Joe here. He left a fan in the studio, and I'm kind of like accidentally rubbing it in with Joe Callie here, who does not have a fan. But Sneaky Joe, thank you for leaving this fan here. It has been a godsend. Real difference maker here. What's up, Joe? Like, he's reaching in the air.
I think there's AC.
Oh boy, we might have. We might have a shift here.
Developing. I need to sit here for a few more minutes. Continue what you're doing. Developing story.
Developing
more
story.
More at 11.
We might have AC. It is the 11 o'clock hour, so we do have more on that. You know what? I'm going to credit Carl Jones if it happens. I'm crediting Carl Jones. His vibes brought it back. So maybe that's what's... Maybe we can finally have some comfort in this room. But something interesting that is going on here with how to talk about the Bills. I admit that I have a toxic mindset with them, which is, you know, how much can I really enjoy of them before you start to get to January? Because that's when my real questions would finally start to get answered. And that's something that I do have to overcome. And I wonder if it's something that can be solved because of the fact that this defense is going to be a new style. It is going to be something where we don't know what it's going to look like. We don't know how it's going to operate. We don't know if it's going to be functionally better in some ways other than just like bend but don't break. Maybe it's sometimes you do break, but you do also make enough plays to swing the game back your way. Because the defense that we've been used to for the last 10 years was bend but don't break, somehow always managing to get turnovers and flipping the game on its head in a different way. You find the opportunity to strike and then you strike. But then the same thing happens in the postseason. A team that is become, I wouldn't say reliant on turnovers, but one that benefited greatly from turnovers all the time, it dries up in the postseason. And then all of a sudden, it's not there. And then they proceed to give up 30 points a game on average. Where it happens in the Jacksonville game, it doesn't for the Denver. Jacksonville. Trevor Lawrence goes down to try to make, not even goes down the field. He gets his chance to go down the field. He doesn't get to. Ball's picked off. But then against Denver, it's not the case. The Bills don't create enough defensively. In a game where they were behind the eight ball, because Josh Allen had turned the ball over four times at that point, and all of a sudden you are still chasing. They're making enough stops, but they're still not able to really get themselves out of it either. It's a game where the Bills defense does ultimately give up another 30 points. Plus. Oh my God, I heard it. Developing. We have AC again. So, when it comes to how this Bills defense is going to look, there is going to be plenty of intrigue about it. But once again, sometimes where life is cruel, Bills only have like 1 week of training camp in Buffalo. There's like, I think, it spans over eight total days, I think, this year at St. John Fisher College.
Yeah, it's a quick turnaround this year.
It's seven practices.
Seven practices.
That's it. At St. John Fisher University. I don't know why I said college. So there's only seven of them. And they're at 8:30 in the morning. It's a little tough for people to be able to get out there and go watch. That hasn't stopped Bills fans before. Let's be real. There's no kiddos in school at this point. So, you know, you can bring the family very easily. But it's also why we see not just the tickets for the return of the blue and red, but also for an additional practice. One where the PSL owners don't have the first dibs on it. I'm kind of encouraged by that, because then it will give someone else the opportunity to look at the stadium that otherwise would not be able to. But there's not a lot of glimpses that the fans are going to get this year of what does this defense start to look like. And when it comes to open practices, I doubt you're going to get much of the real changes anyway. Preseason games, you're not getting anything from this defense. It's all going to be cookie cutter. And in the last segment there, Carl Jones, I think, correctly suspects there might be a little bit of a adjustment period that could happen here, where there might be a little bit of frustration for the fan base, seeing the defense not right away showing the changes that could be there. And I think that's right to suspect. Not just because Carl's a friend of the program, but it makes sense. You're going to have players playing some positions that are different. You're going to have players having to adjust to a different philosophy, even. If they do play some more man coverage, what is Christian Benford going to look like? What is Max Harrison going to look like? How are they going to be able to utilize athletic profiles in order to succeed on an island more often? Or will it become one of those where, oh, you drafted a zone corner back several years ago, and now all of a sudden you're playing a bunch of man and it's not the right fit? Those are all things that are going to have to be answered. And those things will be answered throughout the regular season. How much will the pass rush change? Will they be using more of an odd man front? But because of the NFL in this day and age, how much different is that really? Is it really a true odd man front? Those are things that, again, unfortunately, we're not going to get a whole lot of a look at them. Because there's only, nine total practices that the public get to see this year? It seems a little light. Maybe it's not. But it seems a little light. From when I was a kid, it's definitely light compared to that. The amount of times that you'd be able to watch. But that's also the changing days and times of how sports end up carrying themselves. But there's an interesting thing about the Bills. How they're being looked at. And I point to ESPN and two different sets of articles that are out for ESPN. One of them that I brought up was Jeremy Fowler's article where executives seem to vote on the top 10 players per position. James Cook ends up seventh. Christian Benford doesn't even get a vote. Again, by the way, Taron Johnson got a vote last year, but now obviously no longer a Bill. And yet, so you have the seventh best running back. You don't have any of the top corners in the league, apparently. But then you start to ask yourself, if we're going by position, how many of them would make a top 10? I don't know if DJ Moore is making it. Would Dalton Kincaid possibly have a say at tight end? Maybe. Deion Dawkins, Connor McGovern, Spencer Brown on the offensive line might get consideration. Ed Oliver might get consideration. But then that's kind of really the end of the list. And yet, within a different article, the Bills are the fourth best roster on paper. Which also could make sense. The Bills still do have a lot of talent. Obviously, Josh, Cook, kind of your shoe-ins here, but DJ Moore is a talented wide receiver. Probably the best one that they've had since Stephon Diggs was a Bill. A player that can make a difference. Khalil Shakir being one of the more savvy slot receivers in the league. Just don't make him run screens constantly and drive everyone up a wall. The offensive line is still one of the best in the league. And that comes with the heavy loss of David Edwards in free agency. But you got McGovern back. You still have Dawkins and Brown on the tackles. Osiris Torrance is going to be due for a major pay raise. If Dawkins can get back to at least somewhat of a form from a couple years ago, then the offensive line is stabilized. But now the defense is going to be the question mark. What do we do? What do we see? How's the front going to look? And I can't wait to find those answers. I'm going to be very impatient about it. Because of the fact that it's still several weeks away before we even get to training camp. And then we can get to the camp reports. And then we do have to also take the preseason pledge. Where you can't take things too seriously. But what you can take into effect and take seriously is, well, certain players are lining up this way. These are the guys that are in the first unit with the rotation. Alignment and assignment will be things that you can take seriously from those practices. Just not the, X player dominated in camp again. I think because we saw Keon Coleman do that last year and then very much not have himself a good season. He had a great first game, and then that was pretty much it. But it's going to be a long, arduous task. It's going to be several weeks away of, come on, let's just get to some sort of football again. Because I know that the best thing about it is going to be we're all going to drink it up like we were looking for the oasis with days into the desert. The World Cup has been nice. And it certainly has been fun. It's a shame what happened to the U.S. But we are very much closing in on it's going to be back to football season soon enough. And hopefully, with that, the Bills can get back to a little bit more of a favorable light. Because the Sabres took the spotlight for a while. And the Bills, it kind of seemed like there was a little bit of pessimism going around. He fired the coach. Awkward press conference. This, that, and the other. It'll be nice for the Bills to finally be able to take the field and be in front of fans again. Because then you can forget all about all that stuff and just get back to watching them play football. Even if it is practice and preseason. Because it sure as heck beats the other side of it, which is just speculating on how doom and gloom things can be. We'll take a timeout. Come on back here. Wrap up the Extra Point Show on a nice Thursday outside. And now it's becoming even nice inside. Look at us go. We finally did it. Derek Kramer here with you on the Norton Automotive Extra Point Show. Got a shout out Sneaky Joe here. He left a fan in the studio. And I'm kind of like accidentally rubbing it in with Joe Cali here, who does not have a fan. But Sneaky Joe, thank you for leaving this fan here. It has been a godsend. Real difference maker here. What's up, Joe? Like, he's reaching in the air.
I think there's AC.
Oh boy, we might have a shift here.
Developing. I need to sit here for a few more minutes. Continue what you're doing. Developing story.
Developing
more
story.
At 11.
We might have AC. It is the 11 o'clock hour, so we do have more on that. You know what? I'm going to credit Carl Jones if it happens. I'm crediting Carl Jones. His vibes brought it back. So maybe that's what's... Maybe we can finally have some comfort in this room. But something interesting that is going on here with... how to talk about the Bills. I admit that I have a toxic mindset with them, which is, you know, how much can I really enjoy of them before you start to get to January? Because that's when my real questions would finally start to get answered. And that's something that I do have to overcome. And I wonder if it's something that can be solved because of the fact that this defense is going to be a new style. It is going to be something where we don't know what it's going to look like. We don't know how it's going to operate. We don't know if it's going to be functionally better in some ways other than just like bend but don't break. Maybe it's sometimes you do break, but you do also make enough plays to swing the game back your way. Because the defense that we've been used to for the last 10 years was bend but don't break, somehow always managing to get turnovers, and flipping the game on its head in a different way. You find the opportunity to strike, and then you strike. But then the same thing happens. In the postseason, a team that has become, I wouldn't say reliant on turnovers, but one that benefited greatly from turnovers all the time, it dries up in the postseason. And then all of a sudden, it's not there. And then they proceed to give up 30 points a game on average. Where it happens in the Jacksonville game, it doesn't for the Denver. Jacksonville. Trevor Lawrence goes down to try to make, not even goes down the field. He gets his chance to go down the field. He doesn't get to. Ball's picked off. But then against Denver, it's not the case. The Bills don't create enough defensively. In a game where they were behind the eight ball, because Josh Allen had turned the ball over four times at that point, and all of a sudden you are still chasing. They're making enough stops, but they're still not able to really get themselves out of it either. It's a game where the Bills defense does ultimately give up another 30 points. Plus. Oh my God, I heard it. Developing. We have AC again. So, when it comes to how this Bills defense is going to look, there is going to be plenty of intrigue about it. But once again, sometimes where life is cruel, Bills only have like 1 week of training camp in Buffalo. There's like, I think, it spans over eight total days, I think, this year at St. John Fisher College.
Yeah, it's a quick turnaround.
It's seven practices.
Seven practices.
That's it. At St. John Fisher University. I don't know why I said college. So there's only seven of them. And they're at 8:30 in the morning. It's a little tough for people to be able to get out there and go watch. That hasn't stopped Bills fans before. Let's be real. There's no kiddos in school at this point. So, you know, you can bring the family very easily. But it's also why we see not just the tickets for the return of the blue and red, but also for an additional practice. One where the PSL owners don't have the first dibs on it. I'm kind of encouraged by that because then it will give someone else the opportunity to look at the stadium that otherwise would not be able to. But there's not a lot of glimpses that the fans are going to get this year of what does this defense start to look like. And when it comes to open practices, I doubt you're going to get much of the real changes anyway. Preseason games, you're not getting anything from this defense. It's all going to be cookie cutter. And in the last segment there, Carl Jones, I think, correctly suspects there might be a little bit of a adjustment period that could happen here, where there might be a little bit of frustration for the fan base seeing the defense not right away showing the changes that could be there. And I think that's right to suspect. Not just because Carl's a friend of the program, but it makes sense. You're going to have players playing some positions that are different. You're going to have players having to adjust to a different philosophy, even. If they do play some more man coverage, what is Christian Benford going to look like? What is Max Harrison going to look like? How are they going to be able to utilize athletic profiles in order to succeed on an island more often? Or will it become one of those where, oh, you drafted a zone corner back several years ago, and now all of a sudden you're playing a bunch of man and it's not the right fit? Those are all things that are going to have to be answered. And those things will be answered throughout the regular season. How much will the pass rush change? Will they be using more of an odd man front? But because of the NFL in this day and age, how much different is that really? Is it really a true odd man front? Those are things that, again, unfortunately, we're not going to get a whole lot of a look at them because there's only, what, 9 total practices that the public get to see this year? It seems a little light. Maybe it's not, but it seems a little light. From when I was a kid, it's definitely light compared to that, the amount of times that you'd be able to watch. But that's also the changing days and times of how sports end up carrying themselves. But there's an interesting thing about the Bills. How they're being looked at. And I point to ESPN and 2 different sets of articles that are out for ESPN. One of them that I brought up was Jeremy Fowler's article where executives seem to vote on the top 10 players per position. James Cook ends up 7th. Christian Benford doesn't even get a vote. Again, by the way, Taron Johnson got a vote last year, but now obviously no longer a Bill. And yet, so you have the 7th best running back. You don't have any of the top corners in the league, apparently. But then you start to ask yourself, if we're going by position, how many of them would make a top 10? I don't know if DJ Moore's making it. Would Dalton Kincaid possibly have a say at tight end? Maybe. Deion Dawkins, Connor McGovern, Spencer Brown on the offensive line might get consideration. Ed Oliver might get consideration. But then that's kind of really the end of the list. And yet, within a different article, the Bills are the 4th best roster on paper. Which also could make sense. The Bills still do have a lot of talent. Obviously, Josh, Cook, kind of your shoo-ins here, but DJ Moore is a talented wide receiver. Probably the best one that they've had since Stephon Diggs was a Bill. A player that can make a difference. Khalil Shakir being one of the more savvy slot receivers in the league. Just don't make him run screens constantly and drive everyone up a wall. The offensive line is still one of the best in the league. And that comes with the heavy loss of David Edwards in free agency. But you got McGovern back. You still have Dawkins and Brown on the tackles. Osiris Torrance is going to be due for a major pay raise. If Dawkins can get back to at least somewhat of a form from a couple of years ago, then the offensive line is stabilized. But now the defense is going to be the question mark. What do we do? What do we see? How's the front going to look? And I can't wait to find those answers. I'm going to be very impatient about it. Because of the fact that it's still several weeks away before we even get to training camp. And then we can get to the camp reports. And then we do have to also take the preseason pledge. Where you can't take things too seriously. But what you can take into effect and take seriously is, well, certain players are lining up this way. These are the guys that are in the first unit with the rotation. Alignment and assignment will be things that you can take seriously from those practices. Just not the, oh, X player dominated in camp again. I think because we saw Keon Coleman do that last year and then very much not have himself a good season. He had a great first game, and then that was pretty much it. But it's going to be a long, arduous task. It's going to be a several weeks away of, come on, let's just get to some sort of football again. Because I know that the best thing about it is going to be we're all going to drink it up like we were looking for the oasis with days into the desert. The World Cup has been nice. And it certainly has been fun. It's a shame what happened to the U.S. But we are very much closing in on it's going to be back to football season soon enough. And hopefully, with that, the Bills can get back to a little bit more of a favorable light. Because the Sabres took the spotlight for a while. And the Bills, it kind of seemed like there was a little bit of pessimism going around. He fired the coach, awkward press conference, this, that, and the other. It'll be nice for the Bills to finally be able to take the field and be in front of fans again. Because then you can forget all about all that stuff and just get back to watching them play football. Even if it is practice in preseason. Because it sure as heck beats the other side of it, which is just speculating on how doom and gloom things can be. We'll take a timeout. Come on back here. Wrap up the Extra Point Show on a nice Thursday outside. And now it's becoming even nice inside. Look at us go. We finally did it. Derek Kramer here with you on the Norton Automotive Extra Point Show.
I'm saying it because I'm standing up for Buffalo, damn it. I'm standing up for us. Because what went on is not, that is not how it should go down, in my estimation. That play, these guys spent 3 hours out there playing football, pouring their guts out, to not even say, hey, let's just slow this thing down. That's why I'm bothered.
That was the walk-off for Sean McDermott's Bills career. It's Jeremy and Joe. Good morning. It looks like it's going to rain. It's got to rain, right? Sometimes you look up in the sky and like, I don't even need to check the app. And it's not raining right now, but I know it'll be pretty wet, especially Southern Tier and whatnot. I was supposed to golf in the Southern Tier
today. It's a tough scene then. Yeah.
That's tough.
I saw flash flooding.
I might have saw a severe thunderstorm warning was maybe what I saw.
I did. Alexa alerted me when I woke up this morning that there's a severe thunderstorm.
Yeah, shout out.
Says only 3 p.m. we're expecting rain, though, now. And then it gets sunny after.
All right, so right good for everybody before that. I was going to say, that's a 1 p.m. tee time. Smack dab in the middle of
it. Oh, no.
Yikes.
On McDermott there, though, and we'll take your phone calls at 803-0550. Dennis, if you hang on for 1 second, we'll get to you here. I do want to start with this because teased it going in, and then I watched I didn't watch it in a while. Cooks talked about it yesterday, the catch that was ruled an interception by Jaquan McMillan of the Broncos. I was adamant the next day, and have been since. I think that's a catch every day of the week. I think that when I watch that play, here's how my mind goes on it, especially the back camera angle. Which is, by the way, where the back judge is determining whether or not it's a catch. Brandon Cooks jumps into the air. He has the ball. Okay, comes down. Right foot down. That's one. Left foot down. That's two. Left knee down.
Play's over.
Yep. Play is over.
Call it there.
I thought the knee counted for two, by the way.
Right.
Isn't that true in other instances?
Yes.
It's like four. And then he lands on his left shoulder. He still has it. Only now is McMillan even beginning to wrestle it away.
Play should
After
be over yet again.
Two steps and a left knee, and you could argue the shoulder. It's only when he rolls to his back that the ball starts to be in contestion. And listen, I know there's the surviving the ground thing, but I thought that was... And I think this was proven in plays that happened immediately after in the league. Surviving the ground when you haven't gotten two steps and a knee down, right?
Right.
That's surviving the ground. Mm-hmm. Is you land on the and Cooks didn't land. And I know it happened fast, but this is part of what McDermott was mad about is they didn't review it, and they only claim they reviewed it after McDermott called a timeout, and that is what is. You know, really double down on in this Cooks article that Tim Graham wrote. You should check it out. It's at The Athletic.
Yeah, it's really good. I read it yesterday, too.
Yeah, all about Cooks and wanting to be here and the end of the season, you know, going to Josh on the plane ride home and thanking him for believing in him. Like, there's a lot of good details in here. But I really am most interested in just the end for McDermott. Mm-hmm. And this is not the way I ever would have thought his Bills tenure would have ended. I mean, I didn't think it would end in the first place.
I don't think any of us did.
But McDermott, I mean, what's in here is that McDermott was just irate on the plane ride home. And we know that he called and talked to Jay Skursky about what had happened after and ranted and raved about the process at the end. That Carl Sheffers and his crew wouldn't, like, they didn't look at it. The Broncos were about to snap the ball. And the feeling that the league didn't really take a good look at it. They just went with the call on the field. And that could have been that they were in overtime and there was another game about to start, wasn't there? Remember, that was, like, a part of this. And it just felt gross. It felt the process of it felt gross.
Right. Even if you can get to the result being okay, the whole process of the thing it felt really weird and sketchy. And like in this age where we take 3 hours to look at every single play that we do video review for, this like maybe the most critical play you could have in a football game possible.
Yes.
Aside from if he caught it in the end zone, which in that case, it probably would have been a play over as well. But that not being sort of really
broken down
and like, let's make sure we nail this because this is the game here. We are deciding the game. That is, I think, where that frustration that McDermott, you know, reportedly had came bubbling out of. Like, it's very, very difficult to wrap your head around that
yep.
when you think about the way that sports work now.
Mm-hmm.
And if I was a coach and had to deal with the challenges and the reviews and all that stuff all the time, and I knew how important it was, and in that spot, I got what I thought was a short look,
yeah.
I would be just as mad, if not more, than McDermott was and probably still is in some way.
I wonder how bitter he is that is also the play that ended it.
It's got to be bitter.
Not everybody gets this. In fact, 99% of figures in sports don't get this. The idea of going out on top, like it does not almost ever happen. Something at the end that is not a good memory is what you get fired on. And that's true here. But, man, McDermott was not somebody that really lost his temper in the public eye like that very often, if not ever.
He barely showed any kind of emotion in the public eye. He was always very stoic.
And we saw it on the sideline. We saw it after the game. We see it anytime somebody talks about the plane ride home or what happened after. He was just incensed that play was called an interception and was not reviewed in the proper manner.
Right. Right.
And maybe part of that is he felt that it was coming. Right? Like,
I'm sure.
This is how my tenure in Buffalo ends? Really? Like, if he knew or thought he knew that that could have been the end, then that could only ramp up the amount of, you know,
even if you just think anger that you have in
the
moment.
Yeah, I think that's why the clip we played, I think that's why he's as spirited as he is on the topic, right? Yeah, he's frustrated it happened, but also I think you have to have an inkling, like,
yeah,
I think it might be over.
So, do people go back and watch that a lot? Like, I don't. I just did for the first time in a long time this morning.
I had to, like, last week because I had family friends in from out of town that wanted to talk about it, so I had to reopen
that. You had to put it in. Yeah. Would you put it on the big screen and just, like, slow-mo'd it?
Yeah, they asked me. They're like, was it a catch? And I think it was a catch. Yeah, so I did exactly what you just did. I freeze-framed it and walked them through it.
Well, it's all watching
together. And his entire
body
is down pretty much before the ball pops out. So.
It was not unanimous from everybody that thought the next morning that it was a catch.
No.
I think that most people did. I tried to stay as objective on it as possible. I was also bitter the day after. And today, it's the same thing to me. Just, like, what am I looking for? And I've got 2 feet and a knee before the ball is ever in contention. That, to me, in the NFL, should be a catch. And it was proven after that it should be a catch, that it was a catch.
Mm-hmm. The thing I see the most.
Plays, so.
The thing I see the most is he should have just held onto the ball, and then we wouldn't even have this conversation. I agree with that.
And that is where, like, that was always there that took away from, well, it was a catch. But that's because, the context of what Cooks had done to that point. And this could be, by the way, an argument as to why you wouldn't want him back.
Yes.
Like,
right.
How reliable is he? He's a veteran player. You have to worry about some of the stuff that, you know, you would worry about with, like, Keon Coleman. But last season, on 22 targets, it was only 10 catches. And a lot of that was drops.
Yeah.
He's only listed with 3, but I thought I remembered the number 5. For some reason, maybe it depends where you look on that, but or also how big of the plays there were. There was one against Philadelphia that was down the field, like big plays. I mean, this Denver play is a 40-yard catch that puts them into field goal range. Like, the yardage lost on drops last year from Brandon Cooks. I mean, he has not really had that problem in his career. That is where I would want to believe that might have just been a fluke. That if he were to sign with the Bills right now and play all year for them and have, you know, what do you have in Dallas? 54 targets. He had 54 targets the year before in Dallas. If he were to have that sort of role, which is not even that big a role, that he's not going to be dropping balls left and right. Because you look back at his career, and in his career, his drop percentage in the NFL, his NFL career, is 3.3%.
Yeah.
So that's since they've been... No, I guess that's his entire career. 3.3% is his drop percentage. That's last year with the Bills, it was 18.
Oof. Man.
So that 3.3% is brought up a little bit by the 18.
Right.
Yeah.
You're going to get regression to the mean there.
Yeah.
Right. He's not going to have an 18% drop percentage again. And that would be something that I would look at and say, well, that's not a reason not to sign him. I think signing him would be fine. Bringing him to camp would be fine on a one-year deal and just go from there. 803-0550. Let's squeak Dennis in before we hit the break. What's up, Dennis?
Hey, so I was calling about Keon Coleman, and then you guys started on this topic, and I was going to chime in on this.
Go ahead.
It's funny because you guys just said exactly what I was going to say, is the fact that, you know, Brandon Cooks comes in the middle of the season, and he quite literally got open deep once per game, and he was literally throwing the ball once per game, and he literally dropped it once per game. And it was just like, it was so frustrating because we didn't have a deep threat up to that point. And then we get a guy that can do it, and when you actually go to it when you need it, it was a nightmare, like, every time. And then in the playoffs, there he is again, and he actually catches it, and then he gives it to the other guy. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that, I was so annoyed with Cooks. Sure, he's a great guy and all that, but, like, just – I kind of just want to walk away from the whole Brandon Cooks thing. I mean, the drop percentage in his career, I think a lot of that is he wasn't always just a downfield threat guy. He caught a lot of screens and some short yardage passing, which is, I mean, catching bombs is not easy. You know, you got to track it over your shoulder, and maybe not everybody's cut out for it. I don't know if maybe that's his thing, but I'd like to get somebody else. But with that being said, the Keon Coleman thing I wanted to bring up, just that, you know, it seemed to be common knowledge for some reason that he was always late, and that was the reason why he was benched. But if I can recall, there was one time I feel like Sean McDermott actually addressed it specifically, and somebody said, is this because he's late to meetings? And he just kind of like unbelievably said, yes. And I just feel like there's way more there. I don't think that he just got benched for half the season because he was late to a few meetings or something. You know, like, I think it's got to be deeper than that. So I'm not really sure. I don't really buy that as the answer. So
yeah, thanks, Dennis, for the call and waiting on hold. I'm with you that I think there was more to it. I don't think that you should discount the amount of times a guy could be late before you're starting to see it become disciplinary. Like, no, that absolutely was the catalyst to that. But I think it was made a lot easier for them, and maybe they would have done it anyway, even without him being late, that he would get benched because his play wasn't going well at all. They were throwing him back shoulders that weren't working. He was non-existent in the offense before he was getting benched. So, yeah, I mean, I think play. Simply, like, I never had a problem with him off the field. I was calling for him to be taken off the field before that because he just wasn't playing well. That's it. And I'm hoping now, he worked with Stevie Johnson all offseason. Route running. Maybe he plays a little bit more in the slot. I mean, I don't think it can go worse on the field than it did. So, if there is any growth to happen, I think on the field should be treated as almost an equal to off the field. Thanks for the call. World Cup of Joe coming up at 7 o'clock. Dip our toes into the World Cup a little bit. And if you're on hold, stay there. We'll get to you on receiver Brandon Cooks, the catch at the end of the year, revisiting that a little bit here on WGR.